Live with the Quarterings, Jeremy Hambley.
All right, perfectly on time. And I don't think I'm going to get into daily streams, but this week has been a big week for live streams. Good evening, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. And if you're in the Midwest, good 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because you're officially 1 hour earlier than us. Let me make sure the audio's good. Everything looks good. Going to be doing a live stream with Jeremy Hambley. Keep forgetting his last name, from The Quartering. And it's going to be fantastic and interesting. What has new? What new has occurred between yesterday's stream with Drew Hernandez and today? Has everyone seen the Alec Baldwin George Stephanopoulos interview? In as much as it's disgusting to watch this interview, irritating, obnoxious. It's called unscripted, the interview, because every unscripted interview needs dramatic music overlaid, very, very questionable, highly edited presentation, and questions framed in such a way that Alec Baldwin can reframe this entire incident as per his own imagination that he wants the world to believe. It's my next vlog. I have the content. I just have to edit it together because I've got this. My parents are coming over for dinner, and maybe I'll be able to get it out tonight. If not by tonight, by tomorrow. In other news, I did a 1 hour presentation with the Mobile Bar Association, Mobile, Alabama, where I was invited to talk about what's going on in Canada, Quebec, the lawsuits, the Constitution, and how to ethically protest, and what a lawyer's obligation is in terms of, how to pressure, or rather influence, people to protest without violating your ethical obligations as an attorney. Viva Army, rise up. Oh, God, that's me. At least it's a more recent picture. I can tell by my glasses. The other pictures have had my black framed glasses. Alec 100% true 3. So it was an interesting presentation. If Jeremy doesn't come, I'll just walk you through my presentation, because I made a keynote presentation. It was beautiful. I haven't actually heard from Jeremy, so I do hope he's coming. Maybe everyone get out to Twitter and tweet out at him to make sure this is still going down. But with that said, people, so if anybody's watched The Quartering, it's a YouTube show. I was looking up Jeremy. He has some controversies that were much easier to find than Drew Hernandez. Had a pretty clean history. Andrew Branca, who we did the live stream on Wednesday, clean as a whistle, as far as I could tell. I mean, he said he's divorced, so maybe he has some controversy out there that we don't know about. But Jeremy has had some controversy. Nothing that I find so offensive that it would preclude discussion. But we'll get into it if and when. What is everyone else doing today? I mean, who's watching the Kim Potter trial? Who's watching the, who's following the Ghislaine Maxwell, the Jussie Smollett trial? I didn't follow much of the updates in the Jussie Smollett trial today, but I've been following the Ghislaine Maxwell, however you want to pronounce it, and saw the news as to who's in that black book, some of the notable names on Epstein's black book. I still don't know exactly what that black book represents. There's a difference between a Rolodex type document and flight logs. So I don't know where that black book is situated between the two of those polar extremes, but the trial is revealing, like I said yesterday, what we all know, for those of us who have been paying attention, that there are bad players on both sides of the political aisle, and that the world is fundamentally corrupt, and you protect yourself in as much as you can against the forces that are out there. But the Ghislaine Maxwell, that's going on. The Kim Potter trial, some interesting twists and turns in the jury selection. For anybody who doesn't know who to follow to watch these things, Ghislaine Maxwell, good logic. Joe Niemer has been at court all day, in person doing this, which is phenomenal. He's been tweeting about it, putting out daily updates on Good Logic, LAWGIC. Inner City Press tweeting the Lord's work when it comes to covering this trial. Rakeda is covering the Kim Potter trial. And I was covering Jussie Smollett, but I'm not doing daily updates on that. And now I see Jeremy's in the back end. So this is good. We don't have to sit through my keynote presentation of the fall of what was a free society of Canada. I made the joke and I posted it on Locals for anyone who supports us on Locals, vivabarneslaw.locals.com. I sent the keynote presentation there and I said, putting this keynote presentation together was like putting together the timeline of the fall of a free nation into total tyranny. I'll probably tweet out the keynote presentation later anyhow. Ever consider trying to practice law in the States? I'm considering it. I'm considering just trying to do the bar exam in the one state or the states that do not require a law degree in those states, because I ain't going to law school again. I said, I'm never going back to school. And with that said, Jeremy in the back end from Steve McArdle, he is. Let us bring in Jeremy. Jeremy, how goes the battle, sir?
It's going well. I'm very comfortable in the back end. So, you know, hanging out.
I'm going to see everyone. Let us know if there's audio discrepancies between the two. But I think our audio is good. Jeremy, so this is a first for us. I mean, we've seen each other on the interwebs, but have not discoursed mano a mano.
Yeah, that's right. It's good to spend a little bit of my Friday afternoon with another soul-sucking, blood-sucking lawyer.
Well, let me ask you a question. Were you spending the day with another lawyer earlier today?
Look, I spend my time. That's really none of your business who I spend my time with.
So, Jeremy, okay, look, I think most people watching know you because they probably knew you before they knew me. But for those who don't, I have many questions about how you got to where you are. Elevator pitches to who you are.
I would probably call my YouTube channel like a distillery of pop culture news. So, you know, there may be 10 or 15 things going on each day, and I upload, you know, kind of summaries of 5 or 6 of them, whether it's Hollywood culture news, whether it's legal stuff now, apparently, or it's, you know, crime or tech censorship. Really, I'm a commentary channel on everything except hard politics. So, like, you know, covering the election or something like that, I wouldn't do. But everything else, I pretty much cover.
Okay. Now, may I ask how old you are?
38.
And where are you from? You're from Wisconsin. You're from Wisconsin. How far from Kenosha, given, you know, obvious news items?
20 minutes.
Did you cross state lines to go? Do you have to cross state lines to go to Kenosha?
According to the prosecution, I'm basically in a whole nother country. And then I'm also 10 minutes from Waukesha. So it's been an interesting, you know, couple of years up here in Wisconsin.
We're gonna get into that, because I think people don't, you know, we read about these events in the news, and unless it's in your literal backyard, it is always more distance than it is when it happens in your actual backyard. Before we even get there, were you born and raised in Wisconsin? Are you, how many generation American are you?
Fourth generation American. Parents came from Poland and Germany, like many people in Wisconsin. Grandparents were bread makers and bakers and stuff like that. And, I've been in Wisconsin my whole life. There's, you know, I love this state. It suffers from a lot of what Midwestern states cover from, with, college educated people, the brain drain, they call it. Like, people leave here. They want to go to Chicago. They want to go to California. They want to go to New York. I like Wisconsin. And so I stayed, and, I'm happy I did.
And brothers and sisters, what kind of childhood did you have?
Parents were together. They still are together. And I have one twin sister. She's a nurse. She runs like nurses underselling it. She runs like these nursing facilities. She travels between. She's like a nurse, boss of nurses. I don't know what her exact title is, but, you know.
Okay, now Roberto Gonzalez has been following you since Gamergate, but I'm gonna bring up chats more freely here, because these are actual questions that are directed at you that I definitely don't know. Does Jeremy see Wisconsin as a state in transition from Democrat union members to independent that alternate between parties, or will the state go GOP?
No, I think it'll probably, like in the next election, it will go GOP almost certainly. It's been blue very long, for a very long time, and it switched red for Trump, but only super slightly. The rural areas, just like most rural areas in the United States, are red. But I think, you know, honestly, with Waukesha and with Kenosha, you have more people in the city that are becoming more law and order citizens. And right now, the party of law and order is the Republican Party. So I would argue that it'll always be a battleground state, you know, for the foreseeable future. But I do think it'll go red, both in the midterms and in the presidential election.
Right. And now, education, university, background like that, how did you end up doing what you're doing, I guess, is the shorthand way of getting it.
I have an undergraduate and a master's degree. I have in marketing in my undergrad, and then my master's and MBA with an emphasis on internet and direct marketing. So analytical marketing, data-based marketing is what I'm good at. I have an agency that does paid search advertising, like on Google, and organic search optimization. Did that for 10 years or so. And then, you know, I started YouTubing right around that same time as a hobby. And my very first channel is called Be Your Own IT. It was like how to fix computers. That was back when people still fixed their computers that didn't just buy new ones, you know, and throw it out. Then I realized that I could make some money doing this. So I sold like repair kits and tutorials and things like that. And then I sold that whole channel to like an internet marketing company. And then they gave me a bunch of money. So then I did, you know, I played claw machines on YouTube. I did hobby grade remote control cars. And all this time I had my own agency. And, you know, now the quartering is kind of big enough to where I've stopped taking new clients. I still have a couple of long-term ones, but I mostly just have employees that handle that exclusively. In case YouTube ever went away, then I would, you know, take the clients back on.
Okay, that's interesting. And so the evolution on YouTube, you start, you know, practical repair stuff, and then you get into what is it's not political commentary, but it's darn close. It's just commentary, social media or social justice commentary. I love the fact that I was looking on, what was the website? I won't even bring it up. It's so preposterous. It's called WikiTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All those sites are just really, really left-leaning and like Rational Wiki. They're all like very derogatory.
Well, I mean, it's become a bizarre thing where to call someone anti-SJW is such a loaded term, because it implies that being SJW is itself inherently good. But, you know, before we even get there, when did the channel transition into commentary from, you know, I would say not useful stuff, but repair stuff? Like, when did it get into commenting on what you saw in society, and, you know, what influenced you and what you saw to go that way?
Well, it was when I got canceled. So I had all my YouTube channels until this one, I used to have one where I opened Magic the Gathering cards. A trading card game, like math and chess combined with like mythical creatures. Number one card game in America. It had like 20 million plus players at the time. This is before like Hearthstone and people play this stuff online now. But so like all I did was open up cards and you know, had a little fun. And then I noticed that the culture wars were like, you know, part of it. And I started reading articles that were really disparaging about men, like saying that, you know, men were gatekeeping women from the hobby. And it never jived with what I had experienced like for 30 years of my life. I'd played the game since 1993. And I remember any time a girl walked into the card shop, every guy was tripping over himself to welcome her. And so, you know, I was like, where the heck are these articles coming from? They're disparaging men. They're saying that men are inherently bad and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, our game would have so many more women if it weren't for these pesky men. And so I started saying like, no, you know, like, yo, like, hold on here. That's not true. And like one of the dudes high ups at the company like made some disparaging remarks about me, called me like homophobic and all this other stuff on Reddit. And like, that was kind of my moment where I was like, whoa, okay, wait a minute. Like, opening cards is fun, but like, we're about to lose our game, you know, to this, like, something that used to be an escape from the grind of every day. Now it's this political battleground. And if I don't take up arms, then we're just going to lose it. And, you know, and that's kind of where the narrative shifted for me.
Now, you got to get, I mean, the cancellations, I think, I've read online, but dude, so you got permanently banned from Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. Now, so I'm an idiot because I don't know, I've never touched Magic the Gathering. My gaming is limited to the original NES and beating Contra in under 15 minutes without losing one man. And I can finish Super Mario 3.
Well, anybody can buy a Game Genie.
No, I don't do the 30 men. I finished Contra clean. I've never gotten into like the modern stuff. How do you get a lifetime ban from Magic the Gathering? How does that happen? And what does it look like when it happens?
Yeah, well, it was so, I'm not going to, like, I won't give the long version, but it's much more complex than, so the media reported it, like Polygon and Kotaku reported it as like, he got banned for harassing a woman. Wasn't true. I suggest you watch a video by, he's now a friend of mine, but when he made the video, he wasn't. He was just a fan of my channel. Count Dankula did one called Magic Gate or something like that. It kind of explains it in depth. It's essentially, I had been poking, like, a lot of the leaders inside of Magic the Gathering were really far left leaning. So I had made several videos kind of roasting them. And so, like, they were really just looking for an excuse. And, like, yes, I pushed the envelope. But what they point to is the stream one night where I was like drunk and I had 100 viewers. And I'm protective of the men in my community. I wouldn't call myself an MRA, but I'm pretty close.
What is an MRA? Like,
men's rights activist. Okay. I'm not an activist, but I do, you know, like, men's rights are important to me. And so I'm always leery of like, oh, I'm a hot cosplayer. Suddenly I like Magic the Gathering. Give me your money. And like, so I was like, okay, well, this is like a succubus. Like, you know, come on, guys, like, have some self-respect. Don't give her your money. And I was too mean. I was over the line. But again, 100 people were watching me. And like, you know, so, and I have apologized to her and we're good. But like, that's what the industry held on to. And then when you're like, well, where's this evidence of he harassed women? Well, it comes down to this one stream I did where I called her a thought. And like, but it was really more about like, I had poked enough bears inside that company. You know, and then on my way out the door, I exposed that they had a dozen pedophiles working for them. So that was it. I was never going back after that. But the, you know, the, yeah, so that's really how I deserved it. I poked the bear over and over and over and over again. And but I wasn't the monster that, you know, Polygon or Kotaku said I was.
All right. Now, for those who don't know what a thought is, I do know that it's spelled THOT, but what does it mean?
Well, I mean, it stands for that hoe over there.
Never knew that. I actually never knew that. It's okay.
Well, but you know, to me, it was like, I think that there are men and women. It's just easier for women to come into a male dominated space and kind of pretend they like it. Not all. And it turns out that this woman really did like the game and she wasn't exactly what I was saying. But like, you know, I was like, oh, I did a spicy cosplay of this character that all these guys like. It's just, I'm leery. I you know, I see the pipeline. One of the things I talk about a lot is the pipeline from like Twitch, like the hot tub streams. So the pipeline of these women going to Twitch, a site primarily for video games, because there's all these young men there, and then they float around in a bikini, and then they sell you their OnlyFans account. It's like a legitimate pipeline that is, I don't want it banned. I don't want it respected, but I will point it out and criticize it. And some people don't like that. I think it's predatory. Do I think it should be illegal? Of course not. I mean, it's the oldest profession in the world. So it's just,
I think being a lawyer might be somewhat older. I think the lawyer's first client might have.
Yeah, right, right. You two are probably near 1A and 1B. Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. So now that we know what a thought is for anyone out there, and I guess you have to go with ho and not the the spelt properly word, because that would already be an offensive term in and of itself.
Correct.
Okay, so interesting. Interesting controversy. So what, I mean, you get banned. I don't know how that works, but you get banned from playing Magic the Gathering, or like, how do you
essentially organized play? I mean, I could play it. I own the cards, right? So when they banned me, they locked me out of the software. They stole my collection, which was, you know, worth $20,000. Because legally, I'm only leasing the cards, even though I paid them real money for it. It exists in their software. So they did that. And then basically they banned like your player ID. So I could go play at my local shop, and I did all the time, but I couldn't compete in like organized play. You know, nobody at my local shop hated me. And even the owner said, like, bro, you can just play. Nobody's going to say anything. But I didn't want them to get in trouble. Like, I didn't want him to die on that hill for me. So I just kind of, and then I just kind of like, I don't want to give these people any more of my money if they hate me, you know? So, I just kind of quit the game. It was a really sad day, because I've been playing it since I was, 12 years old, 13 years old until I was in my mid 30s.
How long ago did this happen?
I'm not sure exactly. Two or three years ago, probably.
Okay. So not 10 years, that's like 5 years ago. You get banned.
Yeah.
What impact does it have on what was your channel at the time? Like, did it impact the channel, or is this when you get into now calling out what you perceive to be SJW BS?
Well, my channel was called Unsleeved Media at the time, MTG Headquarters, actually. And then after they banned me, I called it Unsleeved Media so that I could cover other games. But it effectively killed my channel because it killed my passion. Like, what people came to my channel for was watching like card openings. But I didn't want to give them money anymore. So I would talk about, you know, for a couple of months, I would talk about the space. My channel was big considering it was the second largest Magic the Gathering channel in the world. So it wasn't like I was small. To put that in perspective, like, you know, 100,000 subscribers in the Magic community was huge. I don't remember how many I had or had now. It was definitely over 100,000. So I had this community that still backed me, and told me like, hey man, you know, we like you, keep making content. And so then I kind of started the second channel. I don't even remember what I called it originally, where I would comment on pop culture and kind of the culture war in gaming. You know, it's happens in Warhammer 40K. It happens in Magic the Gathering, it happens in video games, everywhere. And so I'd comment on that on the second channel, which eventually became the Quartering. And then, you know, this channel kind of just blew up, you know, rode a couple of popular waves, whether it was, you know, the Brie Larson Marvel stuff or Fallout 76 and Battlefield video game drama from 2 years ago. Every couple of years, there's kind of something, you know, that goes kind of gets really popular here in the commentary world. And I try to just stay on top of it and entertain people.
And the name itself, the Quartering, is it about drawn and quartered, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was, it's kind of a reference to like, how, you know, in my head, it was like, we like this thing, this hobby, and we have various things like, you know, pulling us in other directions, whether it's, you know, you're like, oh, I just want to be this thing and this complete human being playing this hobby, but oh, you can't play this card game if you don't support BLM, and you can't play this if you don't put, you know, trans life matter and your pronouns in your bio and all this crap. And it just kind of pulls the community apart. And it's happened. And like, I'm not incorrect in saying that this, once like this kind of culture, social justice stuff moves into a community, it destroys it. And by the way, like, you would be shocked how many times it's happened. There's like this famous meme, like, on the top of the circle, it says like, why can't we come in your community? And then they let them into the community, and then they make new rules. And then they're like, go find your own community. And it's just kind of like, even like the knitting community, if you look into that, knitting apparently is like hyper political, and I wouldn't think it, but sure enough, if you ask anyone who's a part of that community, they're like, yeah, it's super woke and super political. And these are people that just want to knit, for crying out loud.
Well, I mean, this is what I imagined happened with the Gamergate. What was your level of involvement in Gamergate when that went down at the time?
I was just a spectator, really. I didn't even know what it was until after the fact. I think I was just making Magic the Gathering videos at the time. I didn't really make any videos about it till kind of after the fact, when, you know, all the kind of dust settled, so to speak. So, you know, I'm intimately familiar with Gamergate and what it really was. I reported on it after the fact, but I wasn't really a part of it originally. And I do get attached to it a lot. But I mean, if you go back and just look at the timeline when it happened, you know, I wasn't making videos about Anita Sarkeesian during the hullabaloo. It was well after.
Okay, well, if I have to ask the question, I'm curious. The biggest controversy, the biggest thing that has upset you in your YouTube career, what has been that?
Holy crap. Okay. if I went with something YouTube related, it would probably be the slow transition from YouTube to then ThemTube. And if I know this is kind of a hacky answer, but hey, I'm gonna lawyer it here. You know, it's like, or it's not a perfect answer, but you can redirect if you like. But it's like there's been this slow movement away from the individual creator, and it's been so painfully obvious from simple things like we used to be able to, now you have to be an old head, like an old YouTube head like me, but we used to be able to customize our YouTube channels like a lot more than we can now. Now they homogenized it and everyone just has a banner and a thing. You used to be able to do all sorts of stuff to your YouTube channel. And that was like a goal. Once you got like 10,000 subs, you could put a custom banner up. That was a big deal. Used to have videos that were found algorithmically in the search engines. They changed that. We know this with, shadow banning. And they've said, quite frankly, if it's a news image or a news topic, they force CNN and Fox News to the top, even though they both lie. COPPA, for example, this is something that killed YouTube's entire spaces. The claw machine space was thriving, dead. Lego space, thriving, dead. Anything that YouTube deemed was, you know, for kids, it absolutely got crushed by COPPA. It's been a battle, but I would say how about this? Let me say it this way. The one thing that's made me the most mad about like social media and YouTube is their continued continually ignoring Section 230, meaning they're afforded all sorts of protections if they don't act like a publisher, but they're doing literally everything a publisher would.
And it's funny. That's frustrating. That was my introduction into this. Like when I thought, you know, making law videos, how could that be controversial? How could that be political?
Yeah.
How young and dumb I was back in the day. And then
summer child.
Like when they took down my Alex Jones deposition analysis, it's like, I knew
you didn't know it was a hotbed around him, right? You couldn't talk about Alex.
I knew nothing. I just said, this is interesting. I know nothing of this news because the news doesn't report on it. Is your channel monetized? Are you still having problems with YouTube?
That's good. I'm good.
Okay. Touch wood. And
yeah, for now.
Here's one where I think we met. Do you remember the MXR Plays copyright? Juke and Media. Is that the first time the video licensing agency that I think that's the first time we met. For anybody out there who doesn't recall this drama catastrophe, MXR Plays, are they still on YouTube? They're still doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. And they have a reaction channel and they watch memes. It's are they based in America?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They're like out in New York or something like that, I think.
So reaction videos, they got in trouble for reacting to some licensed videos. The copyright or the licensing was held by Juke and Media, one of the video licensing agencies. They apparently got a strike on their channel after Juke and tried to demand a certain amount of payment for use of the materials. They claimed copyright. They claimed fair use, copyright exception. And so Jeremy covered this situation, and I, again, not having any idea as to how passionate people get over reaction channels, I humbly disagreed with Jeremy. I said, I don't think this was fair use, or it's a little more nuanced in that, you know, these licensing agencies are protecting interests of small creators who make these videos.
You probably got crushed.
I think people realize when they listen to the explanation that there was a nuanced debate here, like reaction to a 15
I'm not saying you were wrong. I'm just saying, like, that's a bold position to take on YouTube. The pro copyright strike position. Bold move.
It was more, look, and I said full disclosure, I don't use Jukin all that often. I use one called Storyful, another one called Newsflare, but I understand their utility. And it's precisely to ensure that if someone wants to play the entire clip of, you know, you pulling your kid's tooth with a squirrel, well, you know, it's not fair to say I'm going to watch it and giggle and then replay your video in its entirety without giving you any licensing, whatever. So I explained it, took a little heat, but that was the first drama that I could recall you being in.
Well, if I can add some context, I think the problem is with Jukin and like Viral Hog, these are companies that like, what they would do is they would license videos and then retroactively essentially extort creators who had already done it, already reacted on it, which I thought was slimy. Like, I don't remember if you remember the emails where they're like, okay, well, you could just send us $5,000 and we won't strike your channel. Like, it was really sketchy. And even
whereas the original license itself might have been, you know, a fraction of what they were requesting. Yeah,
but they know the power they have over us with the strike. And their CEO even like reached out to me like, oh, can we just talk? Like, you're killing me, you know? And I was like, he's like, can we just talk on the phone? I said, no, we can't just talk on the phone. Through text only, or like we can live stream if you want. And oh, I don't want to do that. Which he's really just saying like, I don't want anything on the record. You know, he probably just was like, oh, come, you know, how about I give you license to our videos and you just let us extort these other creators, you know?
That's a bold move, Cotton, but it's the avatar. That is me at a Spartan race. And if I recall correctly, that looks like Mont Tremblant. Yeah, Jeremy, you ever heard of these things called Spartan races?
Is that a pen? Oh, that's Mont Blanc.
Oh, no, that's Mont Blanc. This was Mont Tremblant, which is the trembling mountain. I used to run those races in suits back when the world made sense. Hold on one second here. I wish Jeremy, I didn't read this and I don't know. Politically evocative declarations. Okay.
That's probably Jeremy, true. Yeah, that's actually well put. Yeah.
So that drama died out and MXR Plays, they're back up and their livelihood has not been shut down by the big bad licensing agency.
From what I know, yeah. Yeah, they're okay.
Now, I mean, let's the more recent stuff. What has been getting your attention these days in terms of content? I mean, I think I know the answer, but for those who may not know.
Well, I think that I've, you know, it, for a long time, by the way, Twitter just announced a major reorganization.
The ban hammers are coming, people.
Yeah. What really makes me passionate now, it's always been some level of hypocrisy. Early on, it would be like, oh, there's, you know, these articles disparaging a part of a community, you know, like, you know, hypocrisy there. Now it's media hypocrisy. But like now, I'm more interested in like the bigger. Yeah, it's funny to dunk on Seth Rogen for being an idiot or whatever, but you know, really, stuff that really, you know, I wish I could have more of an impact on is, you know, stuff like, for example, when the Hong Kong thing was kicking up, you know, that stuff is important to me. The Uyghur Muslim concentration camps in China that LeBron James ignores. There's stuff going on that's important. And then I'm also looking forward to looking ahead in life to the upcoming election and looking at, you know, just how much power social media has had in swaying election results, in my opinion. And, you know, trying to now every day, if I can get one person to tune out of mainstream media, like that's great. You know, that's a huge win for me. So it'd be nice if I'd stay around long enough to see the downfall of CNN and other mainstream news. And by the way, Fox is just as biased. Well, you know, people think just because, you know, I may be center right that I don't think Fox is propaganda, but of course it is.
It just, I mean, I will call them out as well and get accused of only picking on Brian Stetler and CNN.
It's so easy though.
Well, it's over CNN's over the top. Fox News is a little more subtle and they have some reasonable content, but then, you know, talking about the Ghislaine Maxwell trial where the Black Book reveals a number of names. And for whatever the reason, Fox News ties the witness specifically to Donald Trump, which then you come out and you call it out and you say, okay, well, you're calling out Fox News. It's only for your love for Donald Trump. And it's like, no, it's because they are now taking the easy dunk on Donald Trump by associating him with this black book and ignoring Bill Clinton, Chelsea Clinton, all these other people who are now more
they're ignoring Tucker Carlson emailing Hunter Biden and asking him for help getting his son into Georgetown. Like, that was in the disclosures this morning. They're all rats, you know, like, and by the way, people forget Fox News kind of turned on Trump. I think Fox News jumped ship in the 2020 election, like mid-election results. They saw the tide turning, and that's why you saw, I think it's called OAN and then Newsmax.
Newsmax.
These two are really just disaffected Fox viewers who, you know, were like, bro, like, Fox kind of was like, I don't know, it was a weird turn for Fox on election night. I don't want my news people to be blindly devoted, but it felt like they were too concerned with hedging their bets and less concerned with, you know, maybe investigating certain things, you know, that people wanted investigated.
Things you can't even talk about. And by the sounds of it, it's going to be even more untalkable on Twitter. Carl Diver says, he is the reason I left MSM and how I found this whole other side of left tube.
Hey.
Jeremy, I mean, let's get into the big one that's been going on. You're from Wisconsin. You're not far from Kenosha. You're not far from Waukesha. I mean, if we're going back to these riots that are occurring in the summer of love 2020, I mean, what does that look like from the perspective of someone who's living? I don't want to say small town has like a pejorative term, and I don't mean it that way.
I don't take it that way. I do live in a small town. It's like a thousand
small
people.
How many people?
Like 1,000.
That's a very small town. Okay.
Yeah.
And my wife is from the Eastern Townships. Her town had Bedford. I mean, it had a few thousand people, many of which got arrested in a massive raid because apparently a lot of people were involved in the drug trade over the border. Oh. Not her family, but you're in small town America where this type of stuff that we saw, you know, it happens on the West Coast, it happens in the East Coast, but it doesn't typically happen in certain areas. How do you react to this? What happens, and you know, how does your life change or go about once you see these things happening 20 minutes from where you live?
Well, maybe want to get involved. You know, I think after Kenosha burned, we did a fundraiser on my channel for a place called Galaxy Gaming Lounge that lost everything in the fiery but mostly peaceful protests. We raised like 90 grand to rebuild that place, but that was just one of 100 that burned that night. And you know, I think, as somebody who, you know, I go to Kenosha all the time. There's a great place. The Mars Cheese Castle is there. You know, of the 4,000 or so people watching, I'm sure some of you know about the Cheese Castle. There's lots of stuff to do in Kenosha, and I've been there many times. And so when I was seeing it happen, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh, these people aren't from here. Like, I could watch and say, like, these people aren't from here. They wouldn't burn down their own city. And as we found out, lots of them weren't. There were stories where the Kenosha sheriff was sitting at the train station because there's a train that comes from Chicago to Kenosha, conveniently. And, you know, there was the sheriff's department was posted up there like saying, hey, no, get back on the train and go home. And if they had done that earlier, you know, I felt like this is just probably my small town perspective, but it just felt like so dumb. I don't think anybody agreed with just pulling out the cops. Like, if they had put the measly 500 National Guard people there that they did for the Rittenhouse verdict during the Summer of Love, none of that would have happened. That JoJo, that brave man, would still be alive, probably, maybe. Maybe one of those kids' dads would have erased them. But
By the way, JoJo, for anybody who doesn't know, is the nickname for Joseph Rosenbaum. We're going to get into that, by the way. The spat with Keemstar. Yeah. Oh, the other one. We'll get there. But yeah. JoJo for anyone who didn't get
there. Yeah. So I mean, when I was living here, I was like, why are there no cops? Because we're not like you see like Portland doing it, and you're like, oh yeah, okay. You know, you see like, but we were like, what are they doing? Like, why are they letting them destroy the city? And you know, even when we had a little experience with it, in Milwaukee. But even there, like, Milwaukee has some wonderful parts, but it also has a lot of the big city problems. Milwaukee has some seriously rough parts, parts where, like, If you look like me, you don't go there. And there's, but most of Milwaukee is really nice. And there's, you know, these video now with cell phone, you know, we see everything. You know, I remember distinctly a clip of a woman saying, don't burn down our neighborhoods, go out to the suburbs, burn their neighborhoods down. Because yeah, to me, I was like, idiots, like you're burning down your own neighborhood, bro. Like nobody doesn't hurt me. Like you're burning down your own family run businesses. But then, you know, I remember that clip and I was like, oh, this is kind of real. Like these guys show up in the suburbs, it's going to be a little different. But then they did show up in the suburbs and it wasn't different. It is let them burn Kenosha down. And
and the idea when you say it'll be different going to the suburbs, I mean, do you
are people wouldn't put up with it?
Yeah, and yeah. Armed people would not put up with it. Is the
not
idea.
Necessarily, but you know, I think people would just, you know, I live in a small town, man. We've got pride. Like we show up when they have like a ribbon cutting when they do a new sidewalk that people show up to. You know what I mean? Like we wouldn't be having none of this, you know, showing up in our small town and burning stuff and taking stuff down. But you know, I underestimated people's apathy or their fear of being canceled or labeled something. I mean, let's, you know, if we're going to just chop it up real talk, like there is like that. We saw this guy let the Kenosha, the guy who was behind the wheel of that mad crazed SUV, the SUV that drove wildly through a bunch of people, the man that was captive in that SUV as it committed the crimes, not the man, but the SUV, that man showed up at a guy's door and he let him in. And why did he say he did? Because he didn't want to look racist. But like, dude, some dude shows up at my door in the dead of winter, not wearing a jacket with, you know, and he's clearly not from around here. And he's like, I'm homeless. Can I come inside and use your, no, bro. Like, no, you can't come in. So people, that's the mind of the small town. They're like, man, I'm afraid. What if this guy's a cell phone thing? And he's like going to film me saying, oh, you're not going to let a black guy into your house. You're not going to, you know, like people are so afraid now that the people who have nothing to lose are running roughshod over these small communities. And it's like Portland's huge. And they just let 100 people run that downtown into the ground. I don't understand it.
Well, some people think it's part of the demoralizing of a people and a demoralizing of a faith in one's country and a faith in one's government. I mean, it's you try not to get, I say conspiratorial for lack of a better word, but cynical maybe.
Yeah.
But there can only be so many things that can explain this. And, you know, I'm looking in Canada, we don't have the similar problems. We just have the other freedom problems. And it's like people will get used to it over a long enough period of time and just accept
it. Look at Australia.
It's nuts. It's
literal. I mean, do you see the people getting arrested? Why is the barbed wire there if it's a voluntary?
They said no. In one of the people who don't know this, Jeremy, what's your Twitter handle? It's the
quartering, right? One word. Yeah.
So I mean, we've been talking about it on Twitter, not to each other, but to the world. In Australia, there was a breakout of one of these facilities where they got over the barbed wire and they had manhunts and checkpoints. And in
dogs.
The report. But in the report, the reporter's like, with an Australian accent, which I won't do, but we don't know who it is. It could have been we don't know if it's the Aboriginals who were staying there. And I'm like, so you think no one is staying in a fenced area with barbed wire? They're being
concentration camp members.
They're just on vacation and they're Aboriginal. So now you literally have in Australia forced detainment behind barbed wires with no due process of minority Aboriginal communities. Yeah. I mean, for their own protection, by the way, for their own protection. And people look at the residential school system in Canada and say, how did this exist for 100 years?
Or in Germany, now they have lockdowns for the unvaccinated.
Yeah, and another tongue-in-cheek is, how are they going to identify these unvaccinated folks? They must have a visible marking on them so that it becomes...
Don't make that joke.
Well, and it's like, I won't even be fair game. You know, when Gina Carano put out her tweet, and I said at the time, you know, Holocaust analogies or World War II analogies, they're always dangerous.
I agree. Yeah.
But I got to say, like, the more I live now, the more apropos, I think is the word, the more similar I can see these societies getting in terms of just what they do. But
you're just a conspiracy theorist, man. You're just a conspiracy. You're crazy. They'll never put people in camps. Are you crazy? They're never going to force you to show your papers.
You know what? Hold on. Maybe I can share this. Let's just see one thing. Share. screen. Let me see if I can do this I don't know how to do this. Forget it. I can't do it because I don't. It was my presentation for this thing, for the continued learning education I gave today. I said they're not. They don't call them camps. They don't call them quarantine facilities. They're called quarantine hotels because right. The government has repurposed a vacant hotel and turned it into a prison of sorts.
Right.
But, So you're sitting there. You're literally watching small town Wisconsin burn. Mm. How are you keeping up to date with the things as they occurred at the time, or did you?
Yeah.
Did you
see it? Yeah. I mean, we were watching the news just like the rest of the world. I think, you know, Kenosha for Wisconsin is not a small town. Waukesha is smaller, but even that's kind of big because our cities here, they're really big. Like, they're not like New York where you have a million people in a square mile or whatever it is, you know, but they're long and our cities are, you know, geographically big. And so they may have hyperinflated, you know, inflated population numbers. Like Kenosha downtown is a pretty big city. I don't know what the exact population is, like got to be a 40, 50, 60,000. So it's not tiny, but it's still, when you live here, Kenosha is not Milwaukee. Everything that's not Milwaukee, Madison or Green Bay is small.
So 100,000. So that's big enough.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's definitely big. Yeah. Big enough. But again, Kenosha is very big physically. You have the downtown area that's got some nice hotels and I'll tell you what, it's crazy. I had a speaking event there last year and you could still see all the spray paint, the BLM stuff on all the bridges and all this stuff. And I think as somebody who lived here, I mean, I never ran across anyone that was like, oh, I understand why they're doing that. You know, it's just, I don't know. Nobody could really understand what these people were doing and why they were doing it, but we just let them do it anyway, which was really sad.
Were you covering the Jacob Blake situation at the time? You talked about that.
I covered it a little bit, I think once or twice. But, you know, I think, again, that was a clean shoot, too. And we still paid that idiot money. My state is going to pay him money. Joe Biden visited him. He didn't visit the Waukesha victims, but he flew right out here to visit Jacob Blake.
Andrew, you know, Yang also, I believe.
Piece of garbage. Yeah. By the way, that guy, like 2 days before that, was in a bar, got kicked out, pulled his gun, and the magazine fell out of it. And like he's just a piece of garbage. And now my state is going to pay him millions of dollars for accepting lead injections when he was in the commission of a crime. By the way, he never should have been there. There was a restraining order. He was resisting arrest. Nobody cared about that. Do you know, nobody cared about any of it, which was all on tape.
The amazing thing is by the time these details come out, the general population who only watches mainstream media already, even if they get to these details, which most of them don't get to, they have a total misperception of the entire situation. They still think he was unarmed. Maybe he had sunglasses.
Most people do. Most people still think he's unarmed. Yeah.
And you go to, I believe
they think he died too, by the way. A lot of people think he died.
Seven shots to the back, got paralyzed as he was armed with a knife, getting into a car with three kids in the back after having gone to visit his ex-girlfriend from whom he had a restraining order for sexual assault, from what I recall.
That's right. Yeah.
It's misrepresented from day one. And only if you're paying attention at the time do you get these details through alternative media. But even the mainstream people who get this later on, their perception is totally tainted to the point where they're bored, they're no longer interested in it, and all they remember, innocent man gets shot in the back.
White cop shoots black man. Look at the white cop that saved the life of a black female. I forget, but he showed up on scene.
Yes, the stabbing one.
Split second, perfect shot, saved a life, and LeBron James is posting his picture calling him a murderer.
Target, you're next, I think, is what
you
had.
Right. But yeah. It's like, dude, like, I don't understand. Like, can we wait 30 seconds? The problem is, again, cell phone footage gets out there. Everyone's like, world star, and they film it. And then nobody knows what happened before or after. This guy, what if one of these lunatics would have went and retaliated against this cop? You know what I mean?
And it's, you know, we should create it. We'll call it the LeBron James effect, which is whatever LeBron James tweets, the exact opposite is more likely true than not.
Yeah.
I remember that. And he says, you're next. I believe he said you're next and had a picture of the cop.
Yeah.
failing to, like, I don't know. Does he know and he doesn't care? I don't think he does it for clicks, but it's just grotesque ignorance and reflexive response to misinformation.
Ask LeBron James if he's ever going to release the footage from his gate in which he claimed there were racist things spray painted on the gate of his mansion, which had a camera on it, but he never released that footage. I'm just wondering, maybe the person who painted it was an inconvenient look, perhaps.
Maybe it was a LeBron Smollett thing where it was maybe now that there's footage of it, and it might have been someone he knew, or I won't say he did it himself, but
he probably didn't do it himself, but it could have been, you know, right. But I remember when the media was tripping, oh, even LeBron James, a billionaire, is still suffering racism. Okay, well, bro, you have 6 cameras on your front gate. Can you release the footage? No? Curious.
It is. Well, LeBron is, I just wonder, like, I don't want to presume these people are evil. Even when it comes to Alec Baldwin, I don't want to presume he's evil, but they behave in a way which is consistently wrong to the point where at a given point in time, it's negligent evil or it's evil. And then everybody knows Jacob Blake armed with a knife. Andrew Yang goes to visit him. By the time
Kamala Harris and Joe Biden,
and by the time the truth gets out there, you know, it's the old Mark Twain expression, or whomever it was, the lie has gone around the world 7 times when the truth is still putting its pants on. Kenosha burning. It leads to the government, for whatever the reason, not calling in the National Guard, and above and beyond that, basically abandoning portions of the city to the arsonist, riotous mob. And then what happens. What was the mood like in Wisconsin during the trial? Was it walking on eggshells? Was it pins and needles? Or
trial? Kyle's?
Yeah, Kyle's.
Everyone thought he never should have been charged. I didn't meet one person that thought what he did was wrong. So that's why, like, when we re-met again on Nick's stream, I was like, bro, I don't know. They're from Wisconsin. Every person I know that saw that footage thought he was defending himself. I thought, you know, some people probably were like happy. They were probably supportive, I should say, of him. I don't think anyone was like, yeah, he killed somebody. But people are like, yeah, somebody's standing up against these hooligans who are burning down, you know, the city. You know, you wake up in the morning and you see car source 4 or whatever is all just burnt out. Every car is just charred.
Minority owned business. I mean, these are things that I didn't even know going into the trial. And I'm reasonably informed, and I go out of my way to get informed. I didn't know that they were minority owned businesses. Not like, and it's like everybody's got to suffer. Minorities have to suffer for minority rights, which makes, I mean, nobody has to suffer for minority rights. That's not exactly how it works.
Well,
but
ask me, here's one question maybe you can answer. You know, I remember having conversations, again, small town bar, but like, why were they painting black owned businesses on it? Why were business owners putting black owned business on the outside? Why would they need to do that? were they motivated? Were you telling me the rioters are motivated by something?
So it's social justice insurance is what it is. You have to put it up.
Lots of white business owners that did the same thing.
I was going to say, this much I was familiar with. Some of them were not entirely honest. I'm sure they employed, a wide variety of people.
I do too. Please don't burn my business down because, you know, I have the whole, as a small business owner myself, you know, I don't sell tennis shoes, but I still carry business insurance and all this stuff. Right. For different reasons. For example, if I breach, like, so I have corporate clients, I have like Fortune 500 clients, I have to carry X amount of insurance because I let their password get compromised or something like that, and they sue me because some whatever happens, you know. Anyway, the whole they have insurance. That nothing infuriated me more than that. Like, first of all, many small businesses do not have insurance, or they're underinsured. Second of all, who do you think's going to pay for that?
Well, I mean, a
it's
lot
not
of
free money.
It's not free money, but it's actually sometimes many times these insurance policies have specific exclusions, which include riots, acts of war, natural. So the double kick in the nuts is you've been paying for your premiums for however long. Yeah. You might have been underinsured regardless, and now you're getting denied coverage because the event itself is one that is excluded. So thanks for your premiums for the last 20 years. No, people, even if they think that, it's the also...
It's just very... Because the news is promoting that like crazy, like, oh, don't worry, they'll be fine. The perception out there was like, oh, these businesses were failing anyway. Now they're getting rich off that insurance money. No, most of these businesses, if you go to Kenosha, you go to downtown Minneapolis, they didn't reopen. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't reopen.
Taco Tuesday, LeBron James. I don't know what that is, but let me see that avatar. Federal law allows citizens to reproduce, distribute, or exhibit portion. Okay, fine. That's a copyright notice. Okay, so Jeremy, so jury comes down, and then a week later, you have the Waukesha massacre, which the media is still describing
in something a happened in Waukesha?
Yeah. No. Can you imagine, by the way?
Happened there? Why? I hadn't heard.
Apparently, someone brought up a chat that in Michigan, not only are they pressing, they're going for terrorism charges against the high school shooter. They've gone after the parents now for felony. I don't know if that's true. I have to go check it.
Involuntary manslaughter, 4 charges
against the parents.
Yeah.
Do the parents buy the weapon for the kid? Is that the argument?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. They did.
I'll have a discussion with Robert about that. I didn't know. I thought he had bought the weapon and then the kid.
No, you got to be 18 to buy a handgun. So they bought it for him. I'm not a lawyer, but it feels politically motivated. It feels like an extremely slippery slope. But I don't know the letter of the law.
Well, I mean, in Canada, I can tell you, I know that civilly, parents are responsible for the acts of their minor children, you know, unless you can prove
civilly, fine. I can
imagine by analogy whatsoever, but that there is something similar under criminal law where it will change something in my digesting of this information that they specifically and deliberately bought the weapon for the kid. I mean, I don't even, we're from a different culture also in Canada where that could never happen here, period. Because even to get a small firearm requires a special license and you don't own them for self-defense. It's strictly for target shooting.
Well, it's not. I mean, if the culture in Michigan is no different than it is here. You know, I had lots of guns before I was 18. They just sat in my dad's gun case. You know, I wasn't, you know, they were locked up. I wasn't allowed to, like, you know, carrying them around and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But that charge feels dumb. Are we going to go back and charge, you know, this other kid? What about the kid in Texas that came to school with his gun? Are we going to find the guy that sold it to him and charge him?
I'm going to withhold coming to a conclusion, but I'm going to discuss this with Robert on Sunday because that changes something in my mind.
Yeah.
Let me see this here. Todd Larson says, my sons, 21 and 18, are freaked out. I watched The Quartering. They are huge Magic fans who support them. Well, thank you very much, Todd.
Hey, nice.
But they go after the kid for terrorism charges. And then Waukesha, it is media blackout. And it is the passive description infuriates me. Now, it's not new to me. I'm not new to this type of description. Back in the days when there were acts of terrorism elsewhere in the world, it was always the passive description. A car plowed through. People died. There were casualties. Passive, never active when it was politically inconvenient for social reasons. When it's political capital, like in Michigan, you jump to it. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen where it's justified. It should happen everywhere where it's justified, or don't call anything terrorism anymore if it doesn't mean anything. But what is going on? Is the Waukesha massacre front page news in Wisconsin even, or are they, you know, is the media there not talking about it?
Oh no, they're still talking about it every day. Yeah. It leads the news here every day. You know, it's they have a beautiful, like, I was just down there last weekend. They have like a nice downtown. They have a memorial. You know, a kid just died too. There's a lot of people still fighting for their lives from this. And I think in general, the average person is more pissed that he got out on $1,000 bond than the political aspect of it. To me, I hate doing this, but look, if he were white and he had militant white supremacist stuff on his social media, like this man did, but like black supremacist or black nationalist or whatever you would call it. I don't know. They would be calling him a white supremacist.
Politically motivated stuff on his social media. He had made videos about, you know, talking about
running doing people over, things. BLM, George Floyd. I'm going to run old people over. White people should go. You know, I'm not saying I can't know for sure he was racist, but I know how the media would report it if it was the other. So when I see that, like, I don't think the general, I think the, when I talk to people at the pub about it, I think we in general agree that, like, he probably didn't like white people and he knew he was going to jail for a long time and he decided to take as many people as he could with him. I don't think it was planned. I don't think this man planned anything in his life, including banging 16-year-olds in Las Vegas. But the, you know, I do think that he purposely ran over as many people as he could. I don't think there's anything refuting that. And the fact that, you know, we all know if the driver looked different, it would still be in the front. It would be in the front page of CNN. Well,
no question. And well, the media, I won't even say media spin, but the reporting would be incessant. It would be specifically angled. And
they wouldn't be saying the SUV did it.
That was the other thing. You reminded me.
What a disgusting thing.
No, but not just that, but they also implied CNN, Jake Tapper, I'm fairly certain, they implied that it could have been an accident because he was fleeing another knife incident, which, from right. what I understand, is not true. But to even say, like, can you imagine when you're dealing with fact pattern like that, to look for alternative attenuating circumstances, say, it was just a tragic accident, to, like, maybe the brakes failed. I mean, at first, fine, like when there was the car crash at the gay pride parade in Florida, and everyone immediately jumped on hate crime. Yeah. Immediately. Literally, the engine, I don't think the engine was still running, but immediately, even though the person came out of the car screaming, crying, what just happened, still went with him. In this, a day later, we've seen his social media. It hadn't been scrubbed. They're still looking for an angle that it might have been an accident, whereas it's double standard weaponized reporting to the point of enraging people. But
You can watch a police officer bang on his window that night. Watch the video of him try to stop him, watch the video of him pull into the parade thing, not slow down, then get into the crowd and then accelerate over 60 people. Like, if he had turned in and hit one and slammed the brakes on and be like, oh my God, this is terrible. Okay. But he didn't. He continued on running over people. That wasn't an accident.
And, you know, in Canada, opinion. Actually, I don't think the only issue is, you know, is he criminally, what's the word I'm looking like for? Deranged. Mentally unfit. Yes, he's mentally unfit. But in Canada, there was a car accident in a place in Ontario. A car went off the road, hit a bunch of pedestrians. But the fact pattern, you look at that, and before you would ever jump to any conclusions, you would say, okay, fine. It was a turn on a road. There was no meaningful event. And it looked like the car veered off and went through some grass before it. So there you say, okay, hold off with some judgment for a bit, as we should in general. But when the facts came in that evening and 24 hours later, the media blackout and then the media spin, it's enough to harden the soul in the worst of possible ways. But Jeremy, now speaking of media reporting in a way that celebrates bad people, what was the beef that you had with Keemstar? For anybody who doesn't know Keemstar, I think it was you calling out Keemstar. I forget who called out who for defending JoJo. Set up the drama for those who don't know. I only found out about it because someone said, Dave, I think I just saw you on H3H3. And then I went to watch H3, Ethan Klein, and I saw the lengthy, I think it was a Twitter war between you and Keemstar.
Well, Keem, he's always been, look, Keem is a very successful YouTuber. He's got more money in the bank than I'll ever have. That said, his Achilles heel is if you point out the fact that he's not very smart. It's something that it really, really bothers him. And, you know, there are a lot of dumb people who have made a lot of money. There's just no question about it. And I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy on the block, but, you know, this is a point that I've made about Keemstar before, and he's just held that grudge. It's the same way if you point out that Ethan Klein is a hypocrite. He cannot let that go. Like, he's featured clips of me on his podcast like a dozen times in the past month. And it's like, I haven't even thought about the guy or said anything about him. He just seethes. So I think what the point was, I had tweeted about Pedro Pascal.
Oh, that's right. Pedro.
Mourning the death. Yeah.
Pedro mourning the death of JoJo, Joseph Rosenbaum, but he didn't say JoJo in his tweet. It was Mark Ruffalo who said JoJo.
Ruffalo said that, but he called them victims.
And, rest in peace, and, he said. Rest in peace to the victims. Which is fine. Like, I don't, you don't revel in the death of your enemies, even if they deserve it. But then there's not reveling in, and then there is glorifying. And
that's
and,
not what he, I think the subtext of his was that he thought Kyle was guilty, though, don't you think?
I believe so as well. And I believe that in order to show Kyle's guilt, he had to ignore the criminality of the individual, which might have attenuated people digesting the sequence of events had they known.
Right.
My impression.
In my opinion, based on Pedro's politics, too, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that the implication there was that they were victims of a violent murderer. So I was like, hey, just my tweet said something like, just remember that when you pay $7 a month for Disney Plus. And then he quote tweeted me saying like, oh, he says he's against cancel culture. This is the same thing. I'm like, well, I never really called anybody to cancel their Disney Plus, which I have done when they fired Gina Carano. I'm not, you know, I'm not opposed to getting down in the mud here and there, but it was a weird spot for him to interject. And then I just killed him with the, oh, you're defending pedos, which to be fair, isn't like, you know, that's not necessarily what he was doing, but I don't really have any time for Keem because he's dumb. And so like, I don't care what he says, or does. I wish him all the best. And, you know, I'm sure he'll find a 17-year-old girl or 18-year-old girl to date sooner or later. Here. So he'll find happiness.
There's a good thing to being married and, you know, having that part of your brain shut off. Like, these are realities. I don't even have to think about. I met my wife in 99. Like, I've been off of that market. I think that part of my brain has, like, necrotized. Yeah, like, it doesn't exist anymore.
I've been with the same girl since senior year of high school. Married her.
Yeah, we're in the same boat.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, I'm like... I don't even like, yeah.
Dating. You know, I could not imagine dating. I couldn't imagine.
If I was ever single, I say this like to my single friends, you know, like if I ever got divorced, I guarantee I would never get married again. Cause I just would be like, I don't think like that anymore. Like,
well,
I think I'm beaten into submission.
You might be able to regenerate that part of the brain, but I would just perhaps not want to be single in today's day and age where I don't know how anyone can date. On the one hand, politics. On the other hand, you know, saying something that is deemed to be a microaggression. On the other hand, dealing with potential false accusations of anything afterwards, from sexual nature to anything. Like, I, short of recording everything 24/7, I don't know how people live.
They don't live in the big cities. You know, like, you know, that's not a problem in Wisconsin. You know, like, people are pretty normal here. I mean, people are like crazy. You know, like there's crazy girls and crazy guys, and you know, when they date, crazy things happen. But like, you know, it's not all that bad.
Christina says,
"White pill you again."
No, it wasn't ever easy to be an adult dating. That much I can understand. You know,
that's fair. I've had
family that have been divorced or elderly. You know, elderly, not young, looking to, you know,
widowers or whatever. Yeah.
What I was curious about, it was funny. I was watching Ethan Klein, and I don't know what his trajectory is going on with his like his YouTube career now. I did find it to be interesting. I don't mind getting made fun of. I mean, I think more often than not, I probably deserve it.
I don't take it personally. Yeah,
but it was just funny. It was an odd. It looked like punching down more than anything else, which I don't really appreciate in social media.
Oh, he said something about you?
Oh no! But he quoted me and referred to me as some sort of. He implied I was a social justice warrior, which, or a culture warrior. I don't know what the word was, but. I don't care. It was weird because I wish you would have tagged me when he did it so that I heard it from other people. And the only thing that I cared about in that entire H3H3 clip was him referring to, I think it was Grosskreutz or Huber, both of which would have been equally wrong, as good dudes who were there just to be medics. He says, I think one of the guys was a bad dude, but one of them was a good dude. That was the only part that I clipped from his video.
Said, yeah, none of them were good dudes.
None of them were good dudes. So I don't know which one you think you're talking about. It's not because you show up with a bag of medics and a
pedophile, or was it the guy carrying the illegal gun as a felon?
I think the guy carrying the illegal gun as a felon who was going to shoot Kyle Rittenhouse, who had his own criminal history.
Yeah.
Oh, let me see. A way to be discouraging, Viva. It's all the okay. It's But have you had any meaningful beefs with any other people on the Twitterverse that has been fruitful or interesting?
I'm sure I have. Well, I crushed Olbermann a few weeks ago. That was fun.
Go on.
And well, I forget what that take was. He had another nuclear take yesterday, like hours after the school event in Oxford. He's like, well, his mom was a Trump supporter. So I'm like, dude, like, are you serious? I've kind of dialed back like the personal beefs because, you know, I feel like I use the crabs in a bucket mentality a lot for people. And I also like I changed who I follow on Twitter now. And I was like, I don't want to get sucked into personal drama. One, because it's a good way to get your channel banned. Two, it's another great way to build up even more people who hate you and who will, repost your stuff in bad faith or flag your videos. And I'm just trying to just take care of business and focus on the prize these days.
What was the word you just said? Flake your videos?
Flag. Sorry.
Oh, flag. Okay, sorry.
Wisconsin. Yeah.
I know what that means in context.
It's, dunking on Olbermann. I forget what it was, but it was one of the most beautiful ratios I've ever taken part of.
Was it not? It was not his freaking out about the vaccine stuff. I know Olbermann had a meltdown.
It was probably that one. If he had a meltdown like vaccine. 2 weeks ago.
It's not to create drama where you don't need it. The only reason you would follow an individual.
Oh, replied. Now I said something about something vaccine related or COVID related, and he replied to me. And he was like, oh, you're spreading misinformation or something like that. And I forget exactly what it was, but I wasn't spreading misinformation. I was correct. And I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember now. So Keith is, I used to watch that guy cover sports when I grew up. I'd go to my friend's house who had cable. We didn't have cable. And he was on ESPN and I loved him. And then I was like, I grew up and I'm like, is that the same Keith Olbermann? And then people told me, oh yeah, that's the same guy. I'm like, what?
Deep, like off the deep end material. I think it comes with the stress of having to sell your soul in order to make a living.
You must, yeah.
Peter says 85% of Wisconsin is some variety of reasonable libertarian, capital R, capital L. Also, Jeremy, talk Viva into moving here if he moves to the States. Reinforce the purple states. Don't go to solid reds. We'll see where I go. I mean,
he makes a valid point.
There is a very big part of me that wants to move out of a city and that wants to move out of Canada, but it gets complicated when you have kids and
I get
Scott,
it.
I'm not reading that out loud, but thank you for the super chat. it's a weird thing watching people actually melt down in real time. It was something about Gavin Newsom.
Oh yeah. 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 It was something about Gavin Newsom, getting his booster. And then people were claiming he had Bell's palsy as a possibility. And I think my tweet simply said, I don't know if it's true or not. I literally led with, I don't know if it's true or not, but if it is, he better get out there in front of the camera because he's, taking away everyone's liberties and forcing him to get it. He doesn't get to hide. Now I think either it turned out that he didn't or it got better.
Well,
I don't know.
Some people will, if we want to play devil's advocate, some people are going to say by even suggesting it, that's how the rumors get spread. Set that aside. The reason for which he was absent was no better than an adverse reaction. Apparently he was off at some, what's the word when people live large? He was off at some extravagant wedding. Having an opulent gathering, not at the French Laundry this time. He was just having another gathering while everyone else is living in absolute misery. He's off gallivanting around the world.
Maskless at another event. Yeah.
I think in this one, he actually was wearing a mask in the background.
Right. But he was. Yeah.
It was total beautiful wedding that he gets to go to. It's very nice while other people have to skip funerals for. Now I want to go before I think my parents are coming over for dinner. So if I hear them come downstairs, that might be the end of it. But
yeah. Yeah.
Does Jeremy see Wisconsin? We got that one. I just want to see. There were a few questions that were legit yours. Jeremy, that Kenosha is pretty connected to Chicago. How do you think Illinois folks moving there more will affect Wisconsin politics?
I don't know because I don't want to assume, Colorado's pretty blue. But, I mean, I would say that if they're leaving, they're hoping for some more liberty. I don't know. I mean, depends what part, you know, like Northern Chicago is pretty rich, pretty upper class. Now, if they're coming from downtown Chicago, probably not going to be voting the good.
But are people actually moving from, I say this with no prejudgments, but are people moving from Chicago to Wisconsin, or is it vice versa? Like in Canada, people are not really flocking big cities to go.
Nobody's moving from Wisconsin to Chicago. That definitely isn't happening. Okay. I don't know about the other direction. You know, I can't say. I haven't seen like any reports. That doesn't mean it's not true. I don't know.
Here we got one, which is that the A in front of it means this is a legit Aussie dollar. Had to climb over barbed wire to catch the stream. You guys are both great. Sincerely, an Aussie. Tito, Godspeed and God bless out there. We know what's going on. All right, now someone said this is Logan Orr, who says, Viva, you're supposed to be polite and ask Wisconsinite about his favorite cheese. Is it a trope or is it an actual thing?
I don't know.
No cheese. Like, are you guys big on cheese?
Yes, we're big on cheese.
Okay.
How dare you? I'm a pepper jack guy or a Munster, but it also depends. Like, you know, are we having are we talking about on a sandwich? Are we talking like a snacking cheese? Are we talking about an aged cheddar? So, like, it does depend. You know, in what capacity I'm eating the cheese. You know, Kobe solid. There's a lot. Yeah. So we do cheese here for sure.
What is this? Like, we have these things called cheese curds in Quebec that we use to make poutine, which is like these bouncy cheese things that you put on French fries and gravy.
Yeah, we don't do poutine here, but we do cheese curds. Squeaky cheese, you know, if it's fresh and you eat it, it'll squeak when you chew on it. Yeah. That's how you know it's fresh. Or deep fried cheese curds, obviously super popular here. I mean, everything, you know, Wisconsin, I believe, might be the fattest state and the fattest country on earth. And we didn't get that way because we like broccoli.
I know nothing of this. I'm just hearing it from a Wisconsinite. What do you have now? Like, what's next on the menu for what you're working on?
Well, I think in the new year, I'm going to continue to, you know, I'm working on, you know, getting my channel back into growth mode again. It was a weird November, but then also trying to work on, like, I host my videos offsite too, so I'm working on that a little bit. I'm working on, you know, pushing alt tech, you know, so I have a Gab account, I have a Getter account, I'm on BitChute, Odyssey, Rumble, but trying to figure out how to grow there has been difficult, so I'm trying to crack that code a little bit. You know, Rumble just went public. I don't know what that means for the platform, but, you know, I view it as, I don't know if it's good or bad. I saw some other pundits saying, oh, this is definitely a bad thing. I don't know. I think all competition with YouTube is a good thing. So
it is. I listened to Tim Pool's assessment. He's sort of ambivalent. He's sort of fence sitting, which is.
Such a weird video. He's like, it's definitely a bad thing, but I like Rumble. We use it, but this is a horrible thing for Rumble.
You understand. First of all, are you on Locals, Jeremy?
No.
Okay, I'm going to flip you a link. I'm going to flip you a contact after this. That's regardless of what you think. My concern is that Rumble, you know, it's going public now, and it might look at this small side business of Locals and say, it's not worth the hassle. It's not worth the manpower. And Locals will be sort of exactly where it was before the merger. But going public, I'm going to talk about it again with Robert on Sunday to see what he thinks. It's risks and rewards. Yes, you go public, you get exponentially more access to capital, so you can build the infrastructure to not be reliant on AWS to actually legit compete with YouTube. Flip side, it's only a matter of time before free speech does not become value added for shareholders, or it becomes totally irrelevant to shareholders for what their interests are. And then it becomes, you know, time to ban the edgy channels so that you can be more advertising.
Let me be very clear. They are going to do that. I mean, there hasn't been a platform that has gotten big in history that has not done that. If you look at what Patreon did, it survived off the edgy channels. The whole reason it was big was because of edgy channels. The second it got big enough to self-sustain, what did they do? They banned all of them. Rumble will do the same. Rumble will likely ban Alex Jones. This is just, you know, it would be unlike, if we just accept that now, we might be pleasantly surprised. But the reality is, you know, nobody's going to compete with YouTube, probably, but you're definitely not doing it without mountains of money. Like, BitChute does a noble job, Odyssey does a noble job, but get out of here. You're getting like 0.5% of what YouTube is. You need huge corporate money to even think about it.
Well, this, and Jeremy Anthony says, minds change when companies go public. Rumble will change their ways. Just watch. That's the concern. My flip side is, maybe, because I don't believe for one second, setting aside the most egregiously violent videos on YouTube, I don't believe for one second that advertisers don't want their ads on certain content that have been flagged as, you know, not.
Well, you happen to be talking to somebody who runs an ad agency specifically with ad buys in the millions, multi-millions a month.
Tell me if I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
Let me tell you where we want our ads on where they will convert. That's the only like care in the world that advertisers have. My agency manages about 10 million a month in spend. Do you know how many times my clients have asked me, can you give me a detailed list of which websites my ads are appearing on? Zero. They say, how do I get more sales at a lower CPA? Now, there was the first adpocalypse. One of my clients was mentioned in the New York Times hit piece about where their ads were showing. And they made me turn off all of the content network, which meant like all of their YouTube ads and their stuff. But then like 2 months later, we turned everything back on. So like these companies don't really care. They want where their ads will convert.
You know what? I'm glad I was prepared for you to tell me that I'm wrong. That advertisers come to you and say, I don't want to be on a Second Amendment channel or a gun functioning channel. Or
nobody's ever said that.
Or on a Jussie Smollett video or on a Bill Cosby video. But it doesn't happen to me very often, so I'm not complaining. And there's no but. I just found it curious. I did a video on Bill Cosby. It was the news of the day. It was a legal analysis. It was nothing shocking. I wasn't using insulting words, calling anybody names. Yellow flagged. So
not advertiser friendly.
Not advertiser friendly. I was like, bull crap that nobody wants to be on this. You want to be where the eyeballs
right.
are. You want
right.
where the, unless it's something so shocking that the eyeballs are only there in sick horror. And maybe that's like, you know, acts of violence.
Like a gore video or something gore, like that.
Basically, which you don't have there. So that was always my belief. Maybe one day it's going to turn where like YouTube is going to say, our advertiser rates, we're not able to charge enough because nobody's getting the proper conversion because all we're doing is advertising on certain
Casey
content
Neistat videos and whatever.
And the viewers of which don't translate into purchase power anyhow. Maybe they'll see on Rumble, Alex Jones is going to be commanding a lot of conversion from ads on his channel. Who knows? So that's where my optimism is. But the, you know, pessimism and realism are two different things. So that's it. That's interesting. You're doing the advertising on a daily or on a current basis. So you still have a feel for the lay of the land.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing AdWords and Microsoft Ad Center too, like more than 10 years. You know, I used to work at an agency that managed almost $100 million a month in spend. So, you know, I worked with Warner Brothers and huge companies. So I understand, by the way, Warner Brothers never told me where to run ads. If you get to the bigger companies, what they say is they don't care about even individual CPA. They want you to spend it. They said every time a new DVD came out, I got like 8 titles or something like that. And they're like, we need to spend $40,000 per title. Go. The hard part for me was spending it. Like I would run a full ad blitz on YouTube on whatever. And I would only spend like 25 grand and then they would get mad at me.
Did they ask?
I never cared about CPA.
What is CPA? Cost per ad?
Cost per acquisition.
But so they didn't ask for the conversion. Like you spent 40
they never
grand.
Did. You get these old boomers in a room where they're looking at like a line graph and they're like, man, we threw $100,000 in here. Did it go up? Did it go bloop? We're looking for the blip. And I'd only dealt with clients that were like, oh my God, we're paying $19.20 per conversion. We can only afford to pay $19.18. We need to do this and that. When you work with the big companies, they don't care at all. They're like, here's a pile of money, spend it. And I hated that. I always rather work with a client that was like plugged in, you know, to their own profit and loss, because the big clients, when they didn't care, that meant they could fire you, you know, easily too, because they didn't know if they were making money.
Yeah, well, that's it. Then you actually have to show that you're being value added for their ad spend. Let me see this. I took it up before reading it for either of you. Why do you think the companies and advertisers respond so quickly to outrage from the left, but so slowly to push back or outrage from the other side?
who's in power.
Well, I'm going to say it's disproportionate in its impact is my perception. I mean, even when the right says let's boycott.
They did it with Goya. Remember they did Goya where they did it, you know, like the beans thing and stuff like that. Yeah.
I think it's just a different strategy. And typically they say, well, boycott and that's it. Whereas from the other side, it's not just boycott. It's harassment. It's bombardment. It is mass flagging. It's a whole variety of other type of commercial harassment that makes it also, it makes it more unpleasant. It happens more often. It happens with greater vitriol and greater intensity. And also I think they're under the impression that they have to respond to it, failing which the repercussions are going to be worse than they ever would be in reality. Cause I don't think that the people boycotting half the time are not actually either not purchasers on the one hand, or they're not going to follow through with it on the other.
Yeah. Okay.
But it worked with Disney Plus a little bit. No, the boycott of,
Yeah, they got stung by that. They did. But they still have 100 million users paying $8 a month. So, you know,
All right. Well, let's see here. I'm going to get a few more questions before we go, but, what do you have planned for the weekend, but not in that sense. What's your next video going to be on, or do you have it? You haven't lined up yet.
I'm covering I just released a video about the defense attorney in the Jussie Smollett trial, leaving crying today when a judge didn't grant her mistrial after she accused him of lunging at her and scowling at her. That video is doing pretty good right now. And then after that, I got a video, and these are always dangerous videos to make, but it's on the Chicago school district making all their bathrooms genderless. Tomorrow.
That's an old story coming back. I mean, that was a story a while back.
Even said that in the video. I'm like, is this 2016 again? Like, are we going to talk, do the whole 40 genders thing again?
Here, from Talix001, who is the meme master in our locals community. I took a picture, okay. Talix. Ask him if he was ever worried the Rittenhouse jury would just say a horse apiece and greetings from Cudahy.
Cudahy. Yeah. No, so, never worried once. I'm on record. What's
a horse apiece?
It's just like saying six in one, half a dozen in the other. Like, I think what they're saying is like...
compromise verdict. Like, finding guilty on a lesser charge just to say we gave you something.
Yeah, I think that's what they mean. I'm on record in coming into the live stream. I was never worried.
This thing, I'm going to go watch your video on the Jussie Smollett, because this is when you don't have cameras, we don't know that it's an outright lie that the judge lunged at her. I'm going to go ahead in my reasonable predictions of what did or did not happen. No judge lunged at anybody. Period. Maybe they pointed their pen at them and said, naughty, naughty.
Don't get brazen.
God, that was, I was watching that again for the stream yesterday with Drew. That judge, even though I disagreed with a lot of things he did, was good on both sides. You know, telling the witness to refer to both parties by Mr. and not by first name, telling the lawyer, don't remind him he's under oath. That's what that leading suggests he's lying to the jury.
Yeah.
Great judge all around. So do you hear that noise upstairs? Like,
yeah, it sounds like it's time to go have dinner.
That's my dog. And I need to go feed this dog.
Yeah.
I would say it's enraging. It's just, the dog needs food. Jeremy, before we go, where can people find you, and how can they find you?
Well, I'm at The Quartering, one word, on Twitter, on YouTube. If you, enjoyed the takes, maybe consider giving my channel a subscribe. It's just The Quartering, one word. And I appreciate you having me on. It was a good conversation, and I appreciate it.
No, thank you for coming. And any day, I looked up your controversies. I think by and large, other than some questionable judgment, which is what happens when you put tons of content out there, I think you're a good person. I've seen the good things you've done. I've seen the money you've raised for people who could not raise it for themselves because they don't have the social media presence you have. So, I'm glad we met. I'm glad we discussed, and let's do it again. Anytime.
All right. Have a good weekend, man.
All right. Now, but thanks, chat. Stick around for 1 second. We'll say our proper goodbyes. And everyone else in the chat, enjoy the week.